This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Dave Fallon, along with Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy.
Hi there, Dave.
The nation's first offshore wind farm is now operating off Block Island. It's the five-turbine Deepwater Wind Array. And to talk about that, we are joined by Deepwater Wind CEO Jeff Grabowski for an update. Jeff, thanks very much in a very busy week for coming and talk to us. A capsule description of where the project stands now.
Sure. Just this week, the Block Island Wind Farm went into commercial operation. We started producing power this week and exporting it to the mainland grid. So that's something we're very excited about, something we've been working on for a number of years.
And this also drops the price of electricity for those people who are on Block Island, right? By about how much?
Yeah, it will. It will drop prices on Block Island because they'll be able to move away from importing diesel fuel onto the island, and they'll have a tie-in to the mainland for the first time. So we expect a price decline of something around 40% for those folks.
How about Rhode Island electricity customers in general? What's the effect there?
So we're just starting to import power, or export power, I should say, to the mainland grid. We'll see how the wind blows, so to speak. It depends on how strong the wind is. The initial results are quite good. As you know, this week we're actually having a severe storm event off the coast of Rhode Island. That's good in our business because it means the turbines will be spinning. So we think we'll be producing somewhere around 1% of what the state needs from an electric perspective over the course of the year, and that's kind of our target and our goal, and we're hoping to hit it.
Just to talk about the weather briefly, is there a point where it gets too windy and you have to shut things down?
In general, we love strong wind, and we love these storm events because the wind farm is designed to capture the energy in the wind. So strong wind events are good, but the turbines do shut down. They go into an idling mode around 56 miles an hour. So when the wind gets to 55, they're running just perfectly. When it gets to around 56 miles an hour, the wind farm senses that the wind has hit that maximum speed, and they automatically feather the blades. Their blades turn so that the wind cannot turn the blades, and it goes into an idling mode.
Okay. In effect, when you hit the on button, were you at full capacity, or is that something you have to build up to?
No, we will be building up over a number of weeks to get to the full capacity of the wind farm. We'll be experimenting with different ways of running the wind farm and tweaking the software and doing things like that. So going operational this week means that we're now in the mode of producing as much power as we're comfortable producing in any given day or any given hour.
Now, you have a lease on some land that's actually in, it's federal water, but it's between Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Is that right?
And it is.
How large do you expect that farm to be?
Yeah, we have a lease from the federal government that we won through an auction a number of years ago, and that has the capacity for about 200 of the turbines that are of similar size to those we have at Block Island. And it's much further offshore. It's in federal waters far over the horizon. So we can build a very big project, supply the energy from that project to southern New England, to Long Island, to multiple markets.
So the Block Island Wind Farm, in addition to being a commercial project on its own, is also really sort of the way to learn about this kind of technology for a much bigger project, right?
That's right. The Block Island Wind Farm really is the first step to building a much larger series of wind farms up and down the East Coast. It's first, but we certainly don't expect the Block Island project to be the last. We have control over several federal lease areas far off the coast, really in several spots in southern New England and one off the coast of Maryland. And we'd like to populate the eastern seaboard with offshore wind farms.
So the one that's expected to be built, and these are federal waters between Rhode Island and Massachusetts, you say it's been said that's about 200 turbines. So if five turbines takes care of 1% of Rhode Island's electricity needs, does that mean that might be able to supply at full capacity 40% of Rhode Island's needs?
It certainly could supply a very large percentage of what Rhode Island needs. But our plan, frankly, is to sell that energy to Rhode Island, to Massachusetts, and to Long Island, because in the same way that hydropower from Quebec really is being sold into multiple markets, it's a big regional energy resource. We view offshore wind as also being a large regional energy resource that can feed increasing increments of the power needs of several individual markets. So I don't expect that Rhode Island would go from 1% offshore wind to some huge number overnight. But that over time, over a decade, over several decades, we would gradually increase the amount of offshore wind, just as we're increasing the amount of renewables, generally speaking, in this part of the world.
This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, and our guest is Deepwater Wind CEO Jeff Grabowski. Mark, you had a question.
Yeah, so Jeff, if as certain as you can be, and you know when the government is involved and when it's you know sort of these big kind of investments, what's the timeline on this next stage? On say this, you know the Massachusetts Rhode Island wind farm.
Our plan is to begin pretty serious marine operations in the spring of 2017. We will begin sending research vessels offshore to this big area that we have in federal waters off of the Rhode Island coast. We'll spend about a year collecting data with through research vessels and other scientific equipment. And if we're successful in completing that this year, we will begin moving into a construction phase in a few years. So I think that the earliest of that project could actually be producing energy would probably be around the year 2020, 2021.
A political question, Jeff. With the incoming Trump administration and its apparent connection to big oil at this point that we're seeing with the cabinet choices, what is your expectation from the Trump administration in its attitude toward alternative energy? Former Texas Governor Rick Perry now apparently will be running the Energy Department, and he is not against wind power per se. So what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, actually, Governor Perry is one of the largest, one of the strongest supporters of wind energy in the country. You know, Texas is the one of the leading states in the development of renewables in the United States. Certainly in wind, Texas is a huge player. But the bigger picture for us is that our business isn't really driven by federal policy. Our business and the energy markets in general are driven by individual markets at the state level. So whether offshore wind or natural gas pipelines or solar or coal plant retirements, all of those decisions are driven by local decisions, by market-based markets in Rhode Island and Massachusetts and New York, and by the energy markets broadly speaking. So unlike countries in Europe, where central governments make a lot of policy decisions on how to build energy infrastructure, in the U.S., we tend to make local decisions, and we tend to let the markets drive those decisions much more. So the impact of an administration isn't nearly as large here as it might be in some other parts of the world.
Early on, the price of the power for the Block Island wind farm was a sticking point for a lot of folks. But obviously, at a larger scale, you'll have economies of scale that will drive the price down. Is there also just in general the price going down for specifically wind? And we know for solar it's been going down a lot to the point where it's even competitive, directly competitive without subsidies with fossil fuel sources.
That's exactly what's happening. The costs of offshore wind globally are coming down dramatically. And it's the same story, as you note, for the solar industry, for the onshore wind industry. Renewables are maturing globally, and that maturation process is seeing more projects being built and the cost level of those projects coming down dramatically to the point where in many places in the United States, in many markets, renewables are head-to-head competitive with other sources of generation. We expect the same thing to happen for offshore wind.
Time requires that we leave the discussion right at this point. And Deepwater Wind CEO Jeff Grabowski has been our guest. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
As always, thanks to Mark Murphy of Providence Business News.
Great as always to be here, Dave.
I'm Dave Fallon, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Major funding for The Bottom Line is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.